Broadcasting from the Taz and Lake Lodge Studios.
Sporting Journal Radio.
Sporting Journal Radio. The Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
All right, thank you for tuning into the show. My name is Brett Amundson. Thank you for listening to this station, listening to the podcast, or listening on demand at sportingjournalradio.com. All right, this week we are going to explore a part of Minnesota that I've never hunted before, the east central part of the state. We're going to start in the Hinckley area and work our way up towards Palisade. And we got a group of people that are in charge of managing habitat in that region for sharp-tailed grouse, for pheasants, for rough grouse, woodcock, deer, turkey, and the whole gamut. And you might be surprised that you can hunt sharp-tailed grouse in that part of the state. And I've always known about it, always wanted to do it. We'll let you know how it went and how you can do it too coming up this week here on Sporting Journal Radio. We'll also talking about traditional fishing trips and how to plan if you want to do a nice fishing trip, maybe with the family over a holiday. Or say you just want to start a new tradition with family and friends. We'll talk to Joe Henry about planning for a trip like that and what you can do up at Lake of the Woods. And we'll also check in with Lucas Mertens from Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort to get a Devil's Lake report to see how ice conditions are doing up there as well. Happy Thanksgiving, by the way. Hope you enjoyed some turkey. Hope you enjoyed some time outdoors. If you're in Wisconsin or travel to Wisconsin this week, you were probably in a stand or doing a deer drive through the woods. Of course, Wisconsin gun deer season wrapping up this week in the 9-day gun deer season. I've seen some pictures from Wisconsin this year. A little bit of snow this week that should help the hunting for this weekend. If last weekend, if the opener wasn't as good for you, hopefully it got better later in the week. All right, this week's show is brought to you by Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort on Devil's Lake. They chase perch and snow bears. Plan your trip to Devil's Lake at haybaleheights.com. It's brought to you by Lake of the Woods Tourism. Plan your ice fishing trip to Lake of the Woods at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. It's brought to you by Tazen Lake Lodge, offering trophy lake trout and northern pike fishing in northwest Saskatchewan. It's an unbelievable place and a very cool location. Tazenlake.com has the details on how you can get up there to join us at Tazen Lake Lodge next summer. Also brought to you by Mid-Migration Outfitters. We got a 10-man heated pit just a mile and a half off the Lac Parle Refuge, which is loaded with geese right now. And I'll tell you what, it got a little nutty during the snowstorm this week out there. You want to come out and do some guided goose hunting with us this fall in a heated pit next to the Lac Parle Refuge in western Minnesota, just 3 hours west of the Twin Cities. Go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. And it's also brought to you by Prairie Sportsman, our new season coming on Pioneer PBS and all the PBS stations around the state of Minnesota. Go to prairiesportsman.org to find out more details, watch past episodes, and more. You can watch our Upper Midwest Emmy Award-winning segment on pollinator-friendly solar. You can go and see that now on our Facebook page or at prairiesportsman.org, or watch the new season coming up in January on all the PBS stations around Minnesota. We did some filming for Prairie Sportsman in the east central part of the state for sharp-tailed grouse. You get to hear more about that coming up later in the show. Now we're going to head up to Devil's Lake to check in with Lucas Mertens from Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Lucas, you're probably thinking more about bull hunting right now than fishing, I bet, up there.
Well, we're kind of in a holding pattern as far as ice fishing goes. We do have a little bit of ice. There's a few guys walking out up on the northern lakes, but not real safe ice, I guess, in my opinion, yet to be out there.
Sure, I probably wouldn't be out there yet. I've walked across a couple of sloughs, and one of them held me, the rest of them didn't.
Oh boy.
So I guess I would be, I still got hunting on the brain, but I'm sure as a lodge owner like that, a resort owner, guide business owner, you got to be thinking about fishing. And we thought it might be an early freeze up and an early season, but you're probably looking now at more of a traditional ice fishing open air type season up there, I suppose.
Yeah, it'll probably be closer to, you know, Christmas time, I would guess. We're supposed to get quite a bit of snow this weekend, and that could raise some trouble with the ice just because it's not very thick right now, so you go put all that wet snow on top of it, and I'm sure it's going to sag, and I'm sure there's going to be slush, and it's going to kind of insulate it. So probably not the best scenario that we could have, but I guess not much we can do about it.
Now, that last storm that rolled through Tuesday night and Wednesday through the region, that didn't hit you guys, right?
No. We're not supposed to get our snow until after Thanksgiving, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
How much snow did you have on the ground already?
Oh, there's just kind of a, I'd say maybe 2 inches, 3 inches, you know, kind of a, just a light dusting over everything.
Just to make, just enough to make deer hunting a little bit better, I suppose.
Yeah, I didn't get to rifle hunt a whole lot just because we were busy trying to wrap up farming and things. But yeah, I've kind of focused on bow hunting now and killing some time, and that's been fun, seeing some deer and killing some time and just waiting, I guess, for ice.
How did your harvest end up?
Well, we got all the beans out, but I would say right in Ramsey County here, there probably 95% of the corn is still standing.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, so I think the plan is to leave that out there maybe till March, April, May. I don't think anybody really knows. The moisture, it's really wet, 26 to 32 moisture, but the test weight isn't there. So any farmer who's listening, you know, if you don't have a, you know, a sellable product, you know, the elevators don't really want it. And I think if we leave it out there and it naturally dries down over winter, usually you gain somewhere between 3 to 5 pounds of test weight. Mm. So if that was to happen, then we would take it off in the spring and everything would be, you know, it'd be a rush, but, you know, farmers, we'll get it done.
Sure.
And the quality will be a lot better. So I think that's probably our only option at the moment.
How do you think all that standing corn affected deer hunting this year?
Oh, I think that's where all the deer were. When we got that great big snowstorm back in October, that 30 inches, it laid down all the cattail sloughs. They're just flat and they're matted down. So there really are no, you know, I haven't seen hardly any deer in the cattails, and typically that's where they hide. So all the deer are in these cornfields. And if you didn't own the cornfield or you didn't know how to hunt it, you didn't get a deer.
Yeah.
You know, I think it probably brought the number of deer that got harvested down just because of that reason.
Well, I know you did some bow hunting this week. Did you see, you were kind of bow hunting. Well, I guess you didn't have to bow hunt around the storm like a lot of my other friends did in other parts of the region, but did you see some movement at all?
Yeah, there's some deer moving. They're still chasing does and doing their things. And what I'm doing is I'm hunting a pocket of trees that has about 400 acres of corn around it. So it's kind of its own little environment there. So I just give it enough time. I'm kind of particular. I'm kind of waiting for the right deer to come in, but you know, so if I get one, I get one. If I don't, I don't. But yeah, it's just some good times out there. I took my little boy out there the other day, and I think I put a picture on Facebook, and he was taking a little nap.
I saw that. Yeah,
he was zonked out. So yeah, it's good to get the kids out and just do some family hunting right now.
Well, I don't blame you for being picky after that buck you shot. Was that last year you shot that big one? I don't know why you didn't just hang it up at that point. Cause
no, that was a few years ago. So I gotta try to top it.
Good luck. That was a nice deer. Well, Lucas Mertens, Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. If people want to book a trip to Devil's Lake this winter to chase perch round and a snow bear, what should they do to get that trip booked?
Well, they should call me direct, 701-351-3130. They can go to our website or our Facebook page, and that's haybaleheights.com. The website has all the prices on it, and the Facebook page is usually, you know, I post on, you know, what's up to date and what's going on. So any of those three options, they can get a hold of me.
Very good. Haybaleheights.com. Lucas Mertens, thanks for the time on Sporting Journal Radio.
Thank you. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you too. Thanks. Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Haybale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Haybale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit HaybaleHeights.com. That's HaybaleHeights.com. If trophy lake trout and monster northern pike are on your list this summer, book a trip to Tazon Lake Lodge in northwestern Saskatchewan.
Everything from numbers to big fish.
See pictures, videos, and more at TazonLake.com.
This is quite the fishery.
Our five-star chef will feed you well after a day of chasing giants on Tazon Lake.
Dream come true.
Get rates, dates, and more of what you can expect.
It could be the best fishing you've ever had in your life.
At TazonLake.com. That's TazonLake.com. Tazon Lake Lodge is a proud partner of Tourism Saskatchewan. Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Broadcasting from the Tazon Lake Lodge Studios, this is Sporting Journal Radio.
Now, once again, Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism joins us here on Sporting Journal Radio. Joe, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Brett.
Do you travel for this holiday, or do you have a tradition for Thanksgiving?
You know what? I have a, I'm in central Minnesota, and I have family right here, so I stay put, which is darn nice.
Well, especially when we have snowstorms and things like that.
Yeah.
Of course, we'd have our first big winter storm on a holiday, you know, right during a holiday like this.
Yeah, you know, it's hard for people to travel, you know, because you know, trying to get people to change their plans up based on weather is tough to do because everybody's so excited to go. But sometimes it's necessary, isn't it?
Well, and as of Wednesday, prior to Thanksgiving, I know it sounds like, and I was in the Twin Cities for Thanksgiving. It sounds like they got 8.5 inches at the airport there. Did you hear any numbers from that initial snowfall from around Lake of the Woods yet at all?
You know, I have not heard too many numbers. No, I haven't really looked into it, but I know that, you know, I think central Minnesota and the metro got hit harder than the north did.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured. The storm stayed south, but northern Minnesota had some snow already, right? Down south, there wasn't any snow yet on the ground. But I know up north they'd had some snow already. I don't know if it had melted yet or not.
Well, I don't think it melted too much. I think it's still up there. But, you know, it's not too much to be affecting the ice or anything like that, which is thankful. You know, if you get a real big dumping of snow on thin ice, it can make that ice challenge more difficult to freeze when you want to make ice. And, you know, we're not to that point, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a lot of open water here as well, and there were some pockets of open water and ice still forming up on the lake up there, Joe.
Yeah, you know, so where we're at is right now we got probably, you know, if I had to guess, probably 7/8 of the lake that's ice covered. But you know, with the warmer weather we've had after that cold blast in early November,
yeah,
you know, we do have open water, and we have big stretches of open water in some areas. But that's kind of typical for big water, big ice. You know, you're gonna get that big ice cube that's formed out there. It's gonna blow around based on the winds. Things open up, and you know, the thing is, with most of the lake ice covered, when we do get a cold snap, it's gonna lock up quick. And yeah, the good thing about it is, you know, yeah, we're all anxious to get out there, but you know, I would say on average, our resorts will get their day houses out there around December 10th. Obviously, give or take based on Mother Nature, but you know, we're sitting pretty darn good for those same time frames. And I know there's cold weather in the forecast.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year. You know, we walked, we're going to hear more about it here later in the show, but we walked for sharp tails around central Minnesota, that east central part of the state, which was pretty cool. It was interesting. I never spent much time hunting in that area, and it's a pretty unique area realistically in Minnesota. But we walked through some wet spots, and in some areas there was real solid ice that you could cross, you know, in a ditch or in a you know, a slough or whatever. And there were a couple of places where I was breaking right through and there was open water. So I just try to stay away from the ice right now as much as possible.
It's safest. You know, I always tell people, you know, the big thing is when you're going up to Lake of the Woods, for instance, you know, work through a resort or work through an outfitter. You know, these guys and gals are out there on that ice daily checking it. And they know all the ins and outs of what's happening in real time. And they're going to keep you safe. You know, what you don't want to do is you don't want to be that person who goes off on their own thinking that, ah, heck, it's, you know, we've had cold weather, it's going to be fine, because you don't know about cracks, ice upheaval, springs, current. I mean, there's a lot of things that can get an ice angler in trouble. And that's why you got to lean on the expertise. It's easy. It just makes your life so easy. There's nothing to worry about if you just you know, lean on the experts.
With Thanksgiving here this week, Joe, I've talked to a few people who are planning to take a vacation, an ice fishing trip over Christmas. Is that pretty common up at Lake of the Woods over some of these major holidays? People make trips like this?
Well, I think, you know, it's common over Christmas. There's groups that, target New Year's every year and spend their New Year's up on Lake of the Woods. And then there's even just the annual traditions, you know, whether it's a group of gals, maybe it's a grandfather, father, son, maybe it's families, it's groups of guys. I mean, whatever the case might be, there's a lot of annual traditions where, hey, we got to plan our annual Lake of the Woods trip. And it's fun because when you talk about these groups going up, groups have been going up for, in some cases, 20, 30 years. And, you know, they talk about, oh, yeah, last year, you know, we got our fish. We had fish fries, but it wasn't as good as that year before. That year before, oh, my gosh, remember that one day we had probably 75 walleyes. I mean, they can start putting the years together and comparing year to year. Remember that one year we had that whiteout when we're out in the fish house, you know? And, I mean, whatever the case, there's always but it's fun because your people are not only looking back at all the good memories they've had together in this traditional Lake of the Woods trip, but they also, every year, they have the chance to look forward and anticipate the next year, which is good for the psyche, let's face it.
So if someone was planning, you know, I know some of those holidays get pretty busy up there, but maybe somebody wanted to start a new tradition. How does a guy, you got a group of friends, like I'm in the middle of planning some trips right now with a group of friends right now. And it's, first of all, it's hard for one guy to take the lead and get something planned. So we need to just kind of figure some things out. I think that might be one of the hardest parts. But when somebody says to you, hey, I got a group of guys, we want to plan a trip to Lake of the Woods, where do I start? You know, what do you tell them?
Well, and you know what? It's a great question. I get it at the sports shows all the time. Sometimes I get people reaching out to me, and that's fine if people do want to reach out to me. But, you know, what I say is this, hey, it really depends upon you and your group and how you roll. So first things first, you know, are you going to be working through a resort and using their fish houses, or are you going to be bringing your own equipment? That's the first thing. Second thing is, hey, out of curiosity, does your group qualify to go up to the Northwest Angle, meaning, hey, do people have passports and passport cards and think the credentials to get up to the Northwest Angle? Because that can be one heck of a fun experience. At the same time, some people say, hey, I don't want to drive that far. I don't need to drive that far because the fishing is really good on the south end of the lake. It just kind of depends on what you want to do. Are you going to do the full service thing where you go to a resort and, you know, you get the American plan, as they call it? The American plan is your lodging, all your meals, and your fish house rental are all included in one package, and they normally discounted some. Or do you want to say, hey, we're going to go through a resort. We're going to go out and use their fish house. It's all heated, and the holes are drilled, and it's on the fish. We're going to do that part of it, but we're going to make our own meals. Some people say, you know what? I'm going to stay at a full-service resort, and we're going to use their fish house, and we're going to stay in their lodging. But rather than get the meal plan, let's go bounce around. Let's go hit a different resort up for dinner each night just to get a different atmosphere each night. It'll be kind of fun experimenting that way. I mean, there's so many neat options. Even when it comes to ice roads, it's like, all right, I'm going to bring my collapsible fish house up and we're going to go just fish each day out of an ice road. Well, you know what? Which ice road do you choose? I mean, there's a lot of them. And, you know, I don't want to miss any, but man, we got, you know, on the South Shore alone, we got, you know, Adrian's, you know, Bugsy, Cyrus, Morris Point, Zippel Bay Resort, Dale's. I mean, I don't think I missed any, but you know, my point is that there's a wigwam is in there. Border View had an ice road now, a small one. So there's a lot of great, great choices to choose. And what I would do is say, hey, you know, where are we staying? What area we used to going out on? Do we want to be fishing structure? Do we want to be fishing that great big basin where those fish are roaming around? All those things are considerations. You know, when I'm going up there, Brett, I'm always considering, you know what? Should I do the morning evening bite? Meaning I love setting up right at daybreak out in that 15 to 18 feet of water along, let's say, Pine Island or Zippel Bay or anywhere really along that whole shoreline. There's going to be that morning and evening bite. And you know what? It's hit and miss. If you hit it, man, you could smack those fish for 30 minutes and have the best fish of the whole day and just whack walleyes one after the other. If you miss it, you miss it. But it's kind of fun setting up where nobody's set up, because really nobody's set up in that 15 to 18 feet. You go set up there in the morning and then you go during the day and fish your walleyes and your saugers. And then if you're aggressive, heck, at about 2:33 o'clock, you slide in and hit that shallow water again for the evening bite. It's really fun.
Well, and if you've got snowmobiles, plan a trip to take the trail up to the northwest angle from the south end, as we did for an episode of Prairie Sportsman. That was pretty cool.
That's the other thing, too. If you have a snowmobile, you know, now you hook your collapsible fish house up to the back, and heck, you can snowmobile up to the northwest angle. You can hit those trails that go all across the lake. They're groomed, they're staked, and now you're reaching places like reefs and different structure that, you know, no resorts are hitting because it's too far away from them. So it just, there's so many cool options up there. And by the way, I just, I saw some pictures yesterday. I wrote an article about snowmobiling on Lake of the Woods. And, you know, whether it's you're an ice angler or a sled head, there's some really neat options. And some of the photography I used was from our trip.
Oh, really? Oh, cool.
Wasn't that a neat trip?
Yeah, it really was. Where can we see that article, Joe?
You know, that's going to appear in Midwest Outdoors.
Cool. All right. Very good. Well, we'll watch for that. And if people want to plan one of these trips, I'm assuming they can get all that info on your website.
Absolutely. You know what? Our website, Brett, is a great source for just checking out all the lodging. And we even have amenities charts on there so you can see what each outfitter resort has. That website is lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
All right, coming up, we're going to talk to all the guys that we had out on the sharp-tailed grouse hunt in that east central part of Minnesota. If you didn't know you could grouse hunt there, we'll tell you more about it. You could actually shoot sharp-tails, rough grouse, woodcock, turkeys, deer, there, pheasants. It's a pretty interesting, unique part of the state. We'll have more with the whole crew from the field when we come back on Sporting Journal Radio. The new season of Prairie Sportsman starts soon. Find out more details at prairiesportsman.org or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat. Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the northwest angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. If trophy lake trout and monster northern pike are on your list this summer, book a trip to Tazon Lake Lodge in northwestern Saskatchewan.
Everything from numbers to big fish.
See pictures, videos, and more at TazonLake.com.
This is quite the fishery.
Our five-star chef will feed you well after a day of chasing giants on Tazon Lake.
Dream come true.
Get rates, dates, and more of what you can expect.
It could be the best fish you've ever had in your life.
At TazonLake.com. That's TazonLake.com. Tazon Lake Lodge is a proud partner of Tourism Saskatchewan. Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Haybale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Haybale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com. Hey, it's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman. And if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. We've got pictures, videos, more information about what you need to bring and what the rates are. Visit midmigrationoutfitters.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
Broadcasting from the Tazon Lake Lodge Studios, this is Sporting Journal Radio.
Thanks for tuning in across the network, on demand at sportingjournalradio.com or by subscribing to that podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And I always like to talk about where we do this show from sometimes. And believe it or not, you guys, this is not the first time I've done it standing out in the middle of a field with a shotgun slung over my shoulder. But I got a whole crew of people here. We just got done filming a day for Prairie Sportsman here in East Central Minnesota. And I'm just going to go around and have you guys kind of introduce yourselves, who you are, and what you do. And we'll start with you, Jared.
Yeah, no problem. I'm Jared Wicklin. I'm the public relations manager for Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. And, you know, we work closely with a lot of different groups in Minnesota, including the Minnesota Sharptail Grouse Society. And, you know, one of the land acquisitions that we were on earlier today, Holy Cow Ranch, just outside of Creshel, Minnesota. Just,
I think you got to say, holy cow.
Holy cow. Outside of Creshel, Minnesota, I think is just a fine example of partners working together. Pheasants Forever, Minnesota Sharptail Grouse Society, and Outdoor Heritage Council recommended a big chunk of funding for that property. It's 1,250 acres. And I think, you know, the unique thing about my job is I get to write about a lot of these different land acquisitions that we do with partners. And I also get to go out and experience them like today, where we're going out and just kind of demonstrating for people the unique wildlife opportunities that we have, especially in East Central Minnesota. People don't think of it as a big, or probably don't even know in some places, that some cases, that sharptails exist. There are quite a few pheasants up there now in certain regions as well. And as we explained earlier today, the Holy Cow Ranch and kind of that unique surrounding area, you can shoot sharptailed grouse, ringneck pheasant, woodcock, rough grouse. And for big game, I mean, you've got white-tailed deer, you've got wild turkey, you've got a really good bear population up there as well. And that's all within, you can shoot all those and or chase them, I guess, if you're a sportsman or sportswoman in a 1 square mile. So it's pretty cool area.
Do you think this area gets overlooked?
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, we didn't see another hunter today, did we? And maybe that's part of, you know, Minnesota numbers have gone down as well. But that's the other reason we're out here doing this, is restoring habitat and looking at the different projects that we've got going on, so that folks know they have a place to come and recreate for the future. And I think that's a big part of what Pheasants Forever and partnering with different groups, especially Minnesota Sharptail Grouse Society, is all about.
And feel free if you guys want to jump in on any of this. We got a whole crew of people here. Joey, let's go to you next. What do you do?
I work for DNR as an assistant wildlife manager in Aiken County, and then I also get to work part of my time across East Central Minnesota, supporting brushland management on other WMAs and our other counties.
And I was amazed, you know, I guess I haven't spent a lot of time in this part of the world. I was amazed at just how big some of these areas were that we walked today.
Yep, if they're going to sustain sharptail, we need them big. And that's the point we really want to get across to folks, is if we want to keep these birds on our landscape, we need to manage at a very large scale of hundreds to thousands of acres and across land ownerships.
And realistically, I know I call this big, but you'd like it to see bigger.
Yeah, you know, really, if you go by the science, we need open areas at least 10,000 acres or more in size to ensure they're going to be on the landscape for the future.
So how does that work? And maybe this is a better question for you, but how does that work when it comes to, say, adding on to some of these existing pieces when you're dealing with landowners or the state or the county? It's probably tough to grow some of these areas, isn't it?
It can be. There has to be a reason that they are motivated to do it. You know, for example, the county land we walk today, they also like to manage that for blueberries. The landowners that Jake works with, that you'll visit with, you know, they want to also improve their grazing management, you know, increase the poundage on their beef, improve their hay fields. So they have to find reasons for their interest to dovetail with ours.
So let's talk a little bit about the population of sharptail grouse. It used to be higher than it is now.
It did. We probably reached our peak in like the 1940s, early 1950s, after settlement, and we had a lot of small-scale farming and post-logging area. We had a lot of open lands. Since then, due to succession, a lot of those have grown into forest, and also we've become more large-scale farming, less of the small-scale. That's sort of tipped the balance to not enough of these natural open grasslands or brushlands that we need.
And there's two prairie grouse in Minnesota. This one is the native one. I think that I was surprised to learn that prairie chickens weren't necessarily native to Minnesota.
Yeah, you know, we think that prairie chicken were present, you know, maybe just in the very southern bit of Minnesota, if at all, right? And they marched north with the settlement and the small grains. Yeah, we have four native grouse in Minnesota, and these two prairie grouse, yes, but also spruce grouse and rough grouse, and 12 native grouse across North America. And unfortunately, there's not a single one of those 12 that's increasing. A lot of them are declining.
Talk about some of the, I know there's some studies going on with the DNR right now when it comes to like West Nile, and talk about some of the work that's out there where we're trying to learn more about the declines and really all of these birds.
Yeah, we have a great grouse researcher, Charlotte Roy, who is on top a lot of these concerns, checking them out. West Nile virus, we just did some monitoring along with Michigan and Wisconsin. You may have seen some of those results that were out recently of what we found with the presence of that being detected in a small percentage of the birds. Also neonicotinoids, the chemical that is put on corn, soybean seeds. We're checking into that and has been found to be present in our birds in the agricultural areas. Also checking into conservation grazing, starting a study on that to see how we might be able to tweak our grazing to improve it for prairie grouse. And we've also looked into fall management on our brushlands and also the season of burning to see how we can tweak our management to improve it.
This is Sporting Journal Radio. We're standing in a field, and I got to say, the two places that we hunted today have probably two of the coolest names. That really, I mean, holy cow! And Gun Lake is that? That's this one. Although what it was, Kreschel, was that the name?
Kreschel,
and then it was the
Holy Cow edition
to the Kreschel. Okay.
Holy Cow Ranch edition.
But we also hunted some county land, and that happened to be across the road from some private land. And our next guest wants to say your name and tell us what you do, and you work with the private landowners.
Right. My name is Jake Granfors. I'm a Pheasants Forever Farm Bill biologist here in Aiken and Carlton. And, we're at Gun Lake, and across the street there's a large 30-acre parcel of land where the landowners implemented a variety of conservation practices from grazing, delayed haying, some brush mowing, invasive species treatments. I mean, he's really treating his whole farm to improve his grazing, wildlife. I mean, all across the board, he's done a lot of stuff. And then across the street, the county land department, Aiken County Land Department, has 160 acres, and they're managing about 70 or 80 acres of it in early successional habitat, that sharp-tail habitat, and also, like Jody said, for blueberry management as well. But we really need to add those, you know, private land complexes in addition to the public land, because these, you know, we're standing on 820-some acres of WMA, but sharp-tails need, you know, 10,000-acre complexes, and that's, you know, a mix of woods, open grassland, mixed brush. So we really need to, you know, look across ownerships, whether that's state, county, or federal, and really implement these conservation practices across the landscape.
When you deal with private landowners, what, I mean, for them to manage with some of these ways that you're talking about, is that making it harder for them? Does it end up making things easier for them? Or what kind of challenges do you see when you deal with these landowners?
Well, I mean, they all have their own reasons, I would say, for doing it. A lot of it's their care for the wildlife. And, you know, they understand the sharp-tail population. And a lot of the locals around Aiken County, you know, will tell you stories of the, you know, even the 70s when there was, you know, a lot more small grains. And they were, you know, basically had to push them out of the front of the way of the combine to get them out of the way. And that's not that terribly long ago. And now, you know, we're talking, you know, 10, 20 birds on it in an area sometimes when there's hundreds. So some of these landowners remember that. They're trying to bring it back. And a lot of times we're trying to pair it with the landowners to complement what they want to do to meet their objectives. We're not forcing anything on. It's all voluntary for them. So,
and everybody's got to win in this situation, right? I mean,
yeah. And otherwise, they're not going to participate. So it's usually a win-win for wildlife, for programs, and for the landowners.
Well, and it's benefiting more than just sharptails. We got to take a quick break, but I want to come back. I want to talk about some of the other benefits, and we got to introduce another guy that's here with us yet. We haven't quite got to him, but we'll talk about how this habitat is benefiting other wildlife as well, too. As we film for Prairie Sportsman, we're in the east central part. Where would you guys say we're, if we were to give a location on the air, where would you say? We're Gun Lake WMA. We'll just leave it at that right now.
Near Palisade.
Near Palisade, sure. Mm-hmm. On Sporting Journal Radio, more coming up from today's hunt.
Hey, our
new season of Prairie Sportsman is coming up on Pioneer PBS at the end of January. Search Your Guide for Prairie Sportsman. You can watch it all over the region, all over. If you're listening to this station right here, you can find it. Search Your Guide for Prairie Sportsman or go to prairiesportsman.org. We were awarded our first Upper Midwest Emmy Award in the past season, and we're very excited about the new shows that we've got coming
up. If Trophy Lake Trout and Monster Northern Pike are on your list this summer, book a trip to Tazen Lake Lodge in northwestern Saskatchewan.
Everything from numbers to big fish.
See pictures, videos, and more at TazenLake.com.
This is quite the fishery.
Our five-star chef will feed you well after a day of chasing giants on Tazen Lake.
Dream come true.
Get rates, dates, and more of what you can expect.
It could be the best fishing you've ever had in your life.
At TazenLake.com. That's TazenLake.com. Tazen Lake Lodge is a proud partner of Tourism Saskatchewan. Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com. Hey anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
Broadcasting from the Tazen Lake Lodge studios, this is Sporting Journal Radio.
We just got done sharptail grouse hunting here in that east central part of Minnesota, and we hunted two different places, and we had some great meals. I'm glad, I don't know who decided where to eat today. Kenny, maybe that was you, but we had some great meals today.
With input from the other members, but yeah, we ate at Gabby's here in Palisade, and this morning we had the Whistle Stop Cafe in Hinckley, and both of them are wonderful little restaurants that take real good care of you.
Well, that's Kenny Reed. Tell us who you are and what you do.
I'm Kenny Reed, as you said, and I am a Pheasants Forever volunteer and a Minnesota Sharptail Grouse Society volunteer. And I have a passion for these birds as well as other prairie species. What I do is help work with everyone to pull things together to get us to address the habitat needs of east central Minnesota.
You're not from this area.
No, I grew up in the Twin Cities area. I was a St. Paul police officer for 31 years. I retired in 2015, and I've had my wife and I have had a cabin on in Pine City area for since 1989. So spending time, and that was my getaway from a stressful job, and I learned a lot about this area of the state, and wanted to get involved when I finally had the time to do so.
Why did you fall in love with this part of the state?
I think, well, first, the lake where our cabin is, the fishing. But secondarily, you had earlier talked with Jared, and he mentioned something that I think is probably one of the most captivating parts of this part of the state, is that you can hunt a variety of species. You can hunt woodcock and rough grouse and sharptails and deer and turkey and bear and, you know, all of that is available in east central Minnesota, and seriously, one could, if they did it right, get at least three of those bird species in one day. And it's a goal for some folks to do just that. And that's what I find fascinating, is that, you know, it's not an overwhelming population of any one of those, maybe except deer, a lot of deer. But you can find good populations of all of those.
So you did some habitat work on the land you own up here.
Yeah, I own an 80-acre parcel west of Pine City, and I bought it in preparation for retiring, and we've done some grassland prairie plantings. We did some water reclamation, some ponds, done some invasive species control, and that, and primarily for pheasants, because that's what my property is mostly geared for. And we've seen an incredible increase in pheasants over the last 3 years.
Yeah, talk about that increase a little bit.
Sure. The first year, I knew as I worked around the farm and we were tearing down buildings and stuff that I had about 3 roosters on the whole 80 acres. And the next year we planted 11 and a half acres of prairie, and we put in the two water pond reclamation projects with the help of Fish and Wildlife Service, Partners for Wildlife Program. And that fall, I knew for sure I had 6 roosters. You know, it might have been more, but I knew for sure I had 6. And last year, through the course of the year, we hunted on my farm. We shot 9 roosters, and I knew for sure there was at least 9 more that carried over through the winter. So that's a pretty incredible increase over 3 years, and it's all due to habitat. It's all, you give them what they need, and in our part of the state, what pheasants in particular need is nesting and brood rearing cover. You give them that, and they will respond.
And that habitat obviously benefited the pheasants on your property. But Jared, as we know, and as you hear Pheasants Forever talk about a lot, it's not just pheasants that benefit from that habitat.
You know, it's really not. And that's the point I was gonna make right after Kenny, is that, you know, the work, whether it's Pheasants Forever, Minnesota Sharp-Tailed Grouse Society, DNR, all our different partners, I think one of the things that management has leaned more towards is diversity. Diversity in the seedings that we're putting on the ground. A lot less grass, because succession over time is going to go to grass anyways, but focusing on forbs and things that are going to impact, you know, not just pheasants and sharp-tailed grouse, but pollinators, right? Songbirds. And pollinators isn't just insects. You're talking anything from hummingbirds to bats to all the different things out there. So, yeah, I mean, diversity is a big part of what we do. And, you know, Pheasants Forever right now on an annual basis, not only are we purchasing 4,000 to 5,000 acres per year that are given back to the public in the form of wildlife management areas or federal waterfowl production areas, but in the state of Minnesota specifically, we are managing habitat on public lands to the tune of 6,000 to 8,000 acres per year. Because one of the common themes we hear is that there's not enough money to go around. Public areas aren't being managed. Well, it's working in diverse partnerships and working in tandem with a lot of different groups to make sure that we're managing public areas to be the most productive that they can be for wildlife and sportsmen, which I think is important.
Occasionally we'll run into situations where you'll have counties that talk about no net gain. Obviously there was a big noteworthy one in Lac Parle County that a lot of people heard about. How often, maybe this question for one of you guys, but how often do you run into that? I mean, obviously in the Southwest, that's where I've heard about it a lot, but how often do you run into that up here in the east central part of the state at all? Who wants to talk? Probably nobody wants to talk about that.
You know, I think one of the things to point out is especially as you look over the pheasant range, maybe less so as you move north, because we've got a lot of state lands and state forests and things like that. But we don't have enough pheasant range up here in east central Minnesota, or sharptail range for that matter, due to succession over time and things getting overgrown. So we're working to establish that. But when you look throughout the pheasant range, of Minnesota alone, I think Lac Parle is maybe, I think, number one in the pheasant range as far as public land goes, and it's at 6% or less, and there's not another single county in the pheasant range that even has that much public land. So, you know, to say that there's too much public land throughout some of those counties, it's not really true. And we continue to work with, I think the thing to point out is that we work with conservation-minded landowners that want to create a legacy in the areas where they are living. And they want to work with Pheasants Forever, they want to work with the DNR, and they want to turn those areas into public areas after they're gone from this earth. And that's one of the things that we can help them do through the partnerships that we have.
And another topic that's hard to talk about, too, and when you look at a decline in a sharp-tailed grouse population in an area like this, is there a point where you say it's just not working anymore? Is there something else we can do? Is there a left turn we can take to help benefit some other species? Or, and I know that's not an easy thing. Nobody even wants to think about something like that. But does that question ever come up, or do you ever think about that at all?
I have thought about it. because, yes, it could happen that we reach that point, but I know from other success stories that if the habitat gets taken care of, that they can come back. And that success story is yet to be written here in East Central Minnesota for the sharp-tailed grouse, but I do believe that it can happen. And I think there's good reasons for that, cultural and heritage reasons, that the people of East Central Minnesota remember those days that Jake was telling you about back in the 70s when there was still plentiful prairie grouse around here. And, you know, once you, they don't actually recognize the decline until it's pointed out to them. I mean, and I'm talking about people that are not sportsmen or sportswomen. There's just farmers and landowners, and until you point it out, then they'll go, oh yeah, yeah, and you know, it's been a while since I saw one of those around. I sure miss them. Well, that means something. That's important, and that's a cultural and heritage historical thing that I think that we can continue to work and garner these partnerships and put the habitat on the ground, both public and private, to bring those out of their doldrums. I mean, I think it's a temporary if we do it right.
And to add on that too, when we talk about the diversity, you know, we saw a few sharp tails today. They were a ways off, and they were moving pretty fast with a 20-mile-an-hour wind out of the north. But you know, the other part of it too is that, you know, we were talking off to the side here that we saw a couple short-eared owls today, mm-hmm. right? Which mm-hmm. is something you don't see all that often anymore. I saw a couple snowshoe hares.
Oh, really?
Back in the bog back there, which was pretty cool. They weren't totally white colored out yet, but they're getting there. Mm-hmm. We saw a pile of deer, which if you're looking for a good place to deer hunt, Gun Lake Wildlife Management Area, that's where the majority of them went after the season ended 2 days ago. So I think it's just I think it's pretty cool, and obviously the work that they're doing out here for the sharp tails is benefiting a lot of different species, and it's just great to see, and a great place to, even if you're not a hunter, bring the family out to witness wildlife.
In the summertime, this place is probably very wonderful looking. You know, if we can get away from having all the rain that we've been having in the summer so you could actually walk it, I bet you the prairie, the insect species and the butterflies and stuff, I bet you it's pretty cool.
Well, it's been a great time. I appreciate you guys taking us out here, letting us film for Prairie Sportsman, showing us some properties out here, and of course for being on Sporting Journal Radio. So it's Kenny Reed and Jared Wicklin, of course. And Jake, what was your last name again?
Granfors.
Jake, thank you very much. And Jody, your last name?
Provost.
Provost. And tell people where they can learn more about the Minnesota Sharptail Grouse Society.
They can go to the website at sharptails.org and learn more. And we also have a Facebook that they can join if they'd like to. And we have biannual spring fling meetings that people are always invited to once every 2 years, in usually April. And every March, we have two brush cuts in northwest East Central Minnesota that we'd love to have volunteers join us at.
Yeah, we should have mentioned that for sure. And then, of course, we walk by a viewing blind here today, and people need to reserve time in that viewing blind?
Yeah, we have a few viewing blinds across the state for sharptail on the dancing grounds. Usually we have one here at Aiken. They can call our Aiken DNR office. Also the Cloquet DNR office. And one more, Baudette DNR, the three that we had last year, and we'll hopefully have again this year.
I sat in that one in Baudette last spring. It was great. There's a lot of birds out there. It's that spring dancing ritual is an unbelievable sight. Guys, thank you very much. Thanks for being on Sporting Journal Radio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Find us online at sportingjournalradio.com to listen to past shows, download the podcast, and more. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for listening to Sporting Journal Radio. We'll see you next week.